Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Let's go cut across to Israel for the Israel Report, which is brought to you with the compliments of the Blue Agency, Israeli Property Management and Sales.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov. Howard, I was thinking about the story that we spoke about yesterday, this one where there were reports about Iranian drones being directed by Russia towards Oman. One of the things that I forgot to mention that I'd read somewhere, which made the thing sound even more serious, and I should start by saying that I'm pleased that this story seems to have just kind of disappeared from the press and gone away. It makes me wonder how accurate it really was. But one of the things I read about it was that the reason that the Russians had directed those Iranian drones towards the ultra-Orthodox community in Oman is because when Iran provided the drones to Russia, that was one of the conditions of the provision of the drones, that Russia would use it as far as possible in attacks against Israel and Israelis. Now, that just kind of just took it one step a little further, which was a little surprising for me. But I do want to talk a little bit more about the Jerusalem 50 Most Influential Jews list that they put together.
Sure.
And one of the things that I was surprised to read was the person who's number three on the list, which is France's Prime Minister, Elizabeth Borne.
Oh, now, I hadn't heard of her, actually. That's interesting.
I was just going to say, I will be honest and tell you that I'd never heard of her. And not only had I not heard of her, but I had no idea that she was Jewish. And so I went to look into Elizabeth Borne a little bit more. And first of all, her Jewish credentials are a little vague. Her father was a Holocaust survivor and absolutely Jewish. Her mother, not so much. And her father apparently converted to Christianity in order to marry her mother. Her father, by the way, died when she was 11 years old, apparently still suffering from the after effects of surviving the Holocaust. He was really psychologically not able to cope with all of that came out of that. And she's gone on to become the French Prime Minister. Now, not only do I question her Jewish credentials, and, you know, I'm putting it out to the listeners out there to say whether they think that somebody with one Jewish parent qualifies to be on the list of most influential Jews. Do we use halachic a means to identify them as Jews, or is one Jewish parent enough? Is one Jewish grandparent enough for them to be on the list, as the law of return allows? The next thing I wanted to just question was how influential she really is. I mean, obviously, as the French Prime Minister, she has a certain influence, but the French president by far is more influential. And so I just wondered to what extent the Prime Minister in France really has influence. And I just wonder whether somebody like Antony Blinken, the U.S. Secretary of State, who comes up eighth on the list, shouldn't perhaps have been promoted, because I just wonder whether he, in his position as U.S. Secretary of State, is not more influential than the French Prime Minister. Just a question out there. And just, you know, I don't mean to criticize the list at all, but it just does make me think a little bit about, A, whether these people really deserve to be on the list of Jewish.
I wonder what the measure was, though. I mean, unless the way they worked it out is said, well, Secretary of State sits below Prime Minister in terms of political position. But I would agree with you, even without looking at the fact or the issue around the Jewishness of the candidate. I would definitely say U.S. Secretary of State is one of the most powerful positions in the world today.
I would have thought so. And by the way, I also wonder whether the Israeli president, Isaac Herzog, who is 11th on the list, I wonder whether he didn't deserve a slightly higher rating than 11th on the list. Interestingly, just the first three or four, I mentioned yesterday that Volodymyr Zelensky is number one on the list, Yair Lapid two, Elizabeth Borne third on the list. The fourth person on the list is, interestingly, the U.S. ambassador to Israel, Tom Nides. Fifth on the list is Benjamin Netanyahu. Sixth on the list is Donna Walden, who's the chairwoman of Disney. And so she comes out sixth on the list for her influence. And seventh is Ronald Lauder. Eighth, Antony Blinken. Ninth is Rivka Friedman Feldman, who is the judge in the Netanyahu trial. And 10th on the list is Adina Chafetz, who is the chief executive officer of Divi Homes. Very, very interesting list indeed.
Such a strange way that they put it together, but fascinating. I'd love your thoughts on it. 34519 or 0618951019. My question is, not only is the list right, would you agree with it, but do you think that somebody born to one Jewish parent, and that in this case the father, so halachically we know that that isn't what defines somebody as being Jewish, would you consider them Jewish for the purposes of this list? 34519 or 0618951019. Yvonne says, I just so love the Morning Mayhem team. I am addicted. Where would we be without it? Have such a laugh to start my day, not forgetting what I learned. Thanks to Chai FM, Howard Feldman, and not forgetting Mukundi. That is from Yvonne. And Anton L says, please do not insult Hardy Dars with that song. That was Michiel Pretorius's comment that that song sounded like a strangled Hardy Dar. Either way, four terrorists were killed in a dramatic clash with IDF troops yesterday. Anthony, tell us about this.
So this was an incident that took place in the area of the Jenin refugee camp. And once again, the IDF security forces were out looking for known terrorists. And the way that it was described was that the two individuals who the IDF were seeking were, in the words of the way that that they like to term these things, they were a ticking bomb. They had plans to carry out terror attacks in the near future. And we understand that the IDF Chief of General Staff, Aviv Kochavi, personally gave his authority for these two individuals to be assassinated if necessary in order to prevent them from continuing their ongoing activities and plans to carry out terror attacks. Interestingly, one of them was the brother of one of the terrorists who carried out a shooting attack in Tel Aviv earlier this year. The other was a partner that was apparently planning things with him. And apparently the two were ready for the IDF forces because they had also surrounded themselves with detonating devices, with protective weaponry, so that potentially IDF troops could be killed or injured in attempts to reach them. As it turns out, the IDF were even ready for that event, and they managed to get the two individuals who were killed in the gunfight that ensued. And then following that gunfight, it turns out that another two individuals were found killed as well in a house. There were reports somewhere that I read that one person was actually killed when their hand was shot by an IDF troop, and they happened to be holding some sort of an incendiary device in their hand, which exploded when they were shot, and that was what ultimately killed them. So once again, an uptick in violence, in expectations in terms of what is being planned, terror attacks, and again, the involvement of Palestinian Authority security forces, because one of the four individuals, and I'm not exactly sure which one, I think it was one of them who were killed in the house and that the IDF troops surrounded, was a Palestinian Authority security forces individual. It was actually employed by the Palestinian Authority security establishment. And some of the reports have suggested that the Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas is now under a great deal of pressure to cut ties with Israel and to make a very, very strong statement following the death of these four individuals. And we are told that up to another 44 people may well have been injured in these clashes on the Palestinian side. I'm happy to report that the IDF on this occasion suffered no casualties at all, and that it was what, you know, from an IDF perspective would be considered a very, very clean operation, well executed, well planned, expecting everything that was thrown at them. But once again, just an indication that things are not all well in terms of cooperation with the Palestinian Authority. Lots and lots of activity, terror activity being planned. And, you know, we cannot hide or the Palestinian Authority, even when sometimes the reports suggest that innocent people have been killed, youngsters, teenagers, innocents, nobody involved, just passers-by, or the IDF are targeting innocent individuals. When it comes the moment for the funeral and the moment when the martyrdom needs to be declared, then the involvement of these individuals in various of the terror organizations can't be hidden, because those terror organizations come forward when the funeral is due to take place, and they place the flag of their organization over the body of the individual who's being buried in order to mark them martyr and to represent them as a exactly. And in this particular case, it was the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade flag that was evident on all four of the bodies that were buried in funerals yesterday. So that can really not be hidden away. The fact that they were members of a terror organization that has, as some of its activities, an attempt to try to kill and maim and injure Israelis, do damage to Israel as much as possible, ultimately, it can't be hidden away. And so the flag of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade was very telling when those funerals were held.
Wow, very significant indeed. A rebel member of Knesset for Yamina has been banned from running the Likud on the Likud list. Why was she banned? Why was he banned?
Well, we're talking here about Amichai Chikli, and he was very well known because he was the first defector from the Yamina party, and he actually went through a process when defecting from Yamina, of trying to protect himself to be able to run on, I guess, a Likud list in the next election. And he mentioned this when the Central Elections Committee met yesterday to discuss this particular matter, because as we already spoke about a week or two ago, he has been positioned in 14th position on the Likud list, which is considered to be a shoe-in for him in terms of getting a Knesset seat on behalf of Likud in the next Knesset. Of course, we don't know whether the Knesset will ultimately take a seat. If a government can be formed, then, of course, he would take up the 14th position. But this appointment, this allocation of the 14th seat on the Knesset, on the Likud list, was challenged yesterday at the Central Election Committee meeting. And the Central Election Committee decided that even though Amichai Chikli went about things when he was member of Yamina, member of Knesset for Yamina, that he went about trying to ensure that he would be available to be on a Likud list. And what he did was he resigned his seat of Yamina, and then he actually went to a Jerusalem district court to reach some sort of a compromise deal that he thought would allow him to escape being sanctioned in the upcoming election. Well, the Central Election Committee yesterday recognized this action that he took when he went to the Jerusalem district court in order to reach this compromise. But the Central Election Committee also thought that the 50 days that passed between him resigning his seat and his reaching the compromise with the court was too long, and therefore that effectively disqualified him from running on the Likud list this time around. Interestingly, when the issue of Idit Silman, who also was a Yamina member of Knesset and has also been included in a very, very feasible seat position on the Likud list, I think she's been included at number 16 on the Likud list, she has been allowed to run for the Likud list by the Central Election Committee, whereas Amichai Chikli has not been allowed to run. We expect that that will not be the final word on this matter, and that this will indeed go to an appeal court in order to challenge the decision by the Central Election Committee. No surprises there, because very frequently these things do land up in an appeal court. So we're expecting this to be heard by an appeal court within the next short while in order to determine whether or not he will be on the Likud list.
It's very interesting how this is all evolving. Do you think it's going to look very different by the time we get to the elections in terms of what these lists are?
Well, the lists really need to be finalized now. I mean, the time has already passed for the lists to be submitted. Oh. So we do have the current makeup of the lists, and now is the moment when people are looking at those finalists that have been submitted by the various parties.
So whatever challenges are going to happen are going to happen now, really.
Right. Now is the time for those challenges, and I don't see the list changing a great deal. I mean, there may be one or two isolated challenges here or there, but in the most part, I think the lists are what they are now. The question simply is, how many of the people on those lists will ultimately make it into the Knesset? That's the big question. Mm. Where is the cutoff point, and who's on the cutoff line, who might squeeze in a seat or who might be excluded? And of course, then we have what they call the Norwegian law, which is that government ministers generally resign their Knesset seats in order to allow people lower down the list to take up a Knesset seat. So that will come later on once the government is formed.
And unfortunately, that's all we have time for. Anthony Reich, wishing you a fantastic weekend, a Shabbat Shalom, and we'll, of course, catch you on Monday. The Israel Report was brought to you with the compliments of the Blue Agency, Israeli Property Management and Sales.